The Attack Zone, Episode 10, PDC Toledo. Hello there, Dice fans, and welcome back to the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. This is just a little bit of an introduction to today's episode, which features JT, Randy, and myself driving in the car on our way to PDC Toledo. You're going to hear us talk about a lot of things, including our teams, thoughts on the tournament in general, and thoughts on the state of Dice Masters, and really our favorite part, which is each other and the community. I will point out that we eat a little bit of crow talking about six cost characters and are they viable or not. And of course, the winning team did in fact have a six cost character on it. They were using Venom Angelo Fortunato. Specifically, we've talked before about how that thing has sometimes failed to live up to its potential. So we'll eat a little bit of crow, but that's fine. Hopefully you enjoy listening to our conversation as we drive to PDC Toledo. And while it probably goes without saying, I'll say it anyway. Obviously, we're in a car. The volume is not going to be perfectly balanced, and you're certainly going to hear a little bit of road noise, though I'm going to try and take the bottom out a little bit. There's not a ton I can do about that. I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks so much, and we hope to see you around the website. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Attack Zone, where I have just learned that my co-hosts do not like SpongeBob SquarePants.
Nope.
So I am putting out an all call for a new co-host for the Attack Zone. Please, mailbag@thereservepool.com. That's mailbag@thereservepool.com. As I mentioned in the bumper, there's a little road noise here. Just deal with it. We are in the car, after all, headed to PDC Toledo, or as they say in some other country, Toledo, Toledo. Let's call the whole thing off.
No, we're not calling anything off.
That's how the kids say it.
That's how the kids say it these days. The
guys,
slang.
What is wrong with you two?
Some horchata yesterday, and then a lot of Mountain Dew this morning.
Get your head in the game.
The narwhal knows what we're talking about.
The narwhal's down with horchata.
Down with the horchata. Adults, find the alcoholic version. Kids, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
Horchata tastes just fine without the alcohol.
Absolutely.
Sure it does.
So, like I said, we're heading, obviously, to PDC Toledo. Should be a pretty big showing for the tournament. It's looking like at least five, maybe six rounds of Swiss last I saw.
Six. If we're north of 32, I think it's six rounds.
So going to be a long day. Should be a fun day. Before we really get into the stuff that we're bringing, I don't know. I'm not too worried. I want to go and roll some dice and have some fun. Maybe that's kind of the taboo way to speak on the podcast geared towards the competitive Dice Masters player, but honestly right now not a ton has changed. We tweak what we can tweak. The meta is what it is right now, and it's pretty well known. It'll be interesting to see if something shakes it up. Certainly if something does, it's not something that we've really worked with. It is what it is. We'll go, we'll roll some dice, we'll enjoy ourselves and see how it goes.
I expect a whole bunch of Oracle and Elf Thief and Bard. I expect to see some Vicious Struggle. What changes are made to those core combinations. That'll be interesting and new. But beyond that, I expect the win conditions to stay the same.
Yeah. The support pieces may change, but even then, I don't think there's a ton of variety. For ramp, you're pretty much doing a very specific set of things. We'll talk about that. Win conditions, they're all there and they're all that fast. So what else are you really going to use?
I mean, we know the guys from Detroit are coming down. That probably means we'll see some mask ring. I expect those guys to run it and run it well.
It's basically Bard, Vicious Struggle, Mask Ring right now, and that's kind of that.
Randy, what are you running today?
I'm running the tried and true mask ring for myself.
Speak of the devil.
Yeah. The only change I'm making is I'm getting rid of the one cost jar and putting in the super rare Ronin.
I think that's a good play.
There were just too few times where I actually found myself buying the jar. It was really only a win more piece for me. So once I had the game on lockdown with my board state set up and my opponent's ramp shot, then I'd start buying the jar to set up the end game. And that's just as easy to do with most two-cost characters as well, like the Elf Thief.
Yeah, and frankly, Ronin is pretty cheap in his own right, and just a great defensive piece as well. So I think that's a fantastic call there.
Yep. What about you, Dave? What are you running?
So I am going with a variation on the Bard. I have dropped Professor X in favor of a mask ring. A mask ring. What am I talking about?
I don't know.
In favor of a ring resurrection. Ramp setup. Wrong ring, you know.
Yeah.
I just got rings on the brain. A ring res ramp setup. My other basic action is Imprisoned. So obviously a little worried about Taunt, but I have Oracle to help things there. To get around Taunt on my own end, I have the Beholder, the 4-mask Beholder from the new D&D set.
To get around Oracle on your own end?
Get around Oracle, played against me, and just for the discounting that it offers. It can be, unless it really misses on some rolls, it can be very consistent in getting out the dice that it wants when it wants them. It can be very predictable, that dice engine. So maybe it's not rolling as much energy, but everything is very deliberate. And it has a really good way of making up for that by, you know, the shenanigans that the Beholder allows, getting those two free globals. Other than that, no Elf Thief. Since I'm using Imprisoned, I'm not worried about, Elf Thief, okay, it messes up ramp, but it's also meant to take away energy for the win condition to Cloud Kill. Well, I don't have Cloud Kill, so I'm not so concerned about that end of it. And since I do have Imprisoned, I have Breaker, the Magical Warrior, since it can cancel out an action die that's active. And that's basically what I'm doing. How about you, JT?
Well, I'm actually running almost the same thing. I think I dropped the Ring Global for Spray, and that's... other than that, I think our teams are the same.
Yeah.
I think Spray is pretty important. Going second, especially, I think it's a good tool against a Bardsaw team. So, you know, you buy Spray and you resurrect to make sure you got it turn three, and then... then you can't be taunted, and you can't, your opponent can't Professor X. So, when I decided to drop Professor X and go with, the Ring Res engine, I thought, this is great. Oh, I need Spray. I gotta be able to steal Professor X at least if I'm not bringing it. So I eventually came to the conclusion to drop Ring and just do more math, and keep my bag the way I want it. So, I don't have the Ring Global available to me, so that makes running that engine harder. But I'll do more math and plan on getting ahead that way. I think one of the things that, I'll ask you guys, what are things that you guys can think we can do now in the way the game is today in the current meta to get ahead? Besides going first, what can you do in your games to get ahead?
Well, you can drop from the tournament and play Rock, Paper, Wizard.
Not released yet.
Well, maybe an early prototype.
We'll backburner that plan.
Frankly, a lot of it is hoping your opponent misses. Now, granted, Spray is something that can help your opponent miss on their ramp. But the reason that I wasn't so worried about including Spray for myself is that you still need Bard to miss going second. You still need those teams to miss. And if they don't, there's not a whole lot you can do about it anyway. And Spray doesn't get you to win. It just gets you to not lose in some of those circumstances. I get when you buy it and stuff. And JT, you being the player you are, I'm sure you're going to have success with it anyway, because you just, you know, you bleed confidence from every orifice of your body. But granted, spray is something that can help you get ahead. You just have to make sure that you haven't invested in what you're doing with spray to then make it too slow to build to what you need to do to win.
Right.
Other than that, I'm not sure I get the premise of the question, because frankly, I don't feel like there is a ton. There's not a ton you can do. There are some little things, and it's always about looking for those equity plays, but there's not a ton that you can do, and that's why I'm more concerned with going, the camaraderie, you guys, Isaac, some of the other gentlemen who are coming with us, and just enjoying myself, because beyond that, I don't feel that there is a significant enough amount of control that I have over any outcome to really put all that much care into it in terms of, like, the mental real estate I'm going to spend worrying about anything.
Yeah, I guess my question was driving towards this. Like, I feel like one of the ways to get ahead and push towards getting ahead or winning is to play, force the game to be a more challenging game than your opponent is prepared to play. So by that I mean using tools and using tech that make bag management harder, make deciding to attack harder, just things that begin to make the game more challenging, right? Like, that's one of the things that Taunt does. You bring a control piece, and if you don't have distraction, you're going to lose your control piece to Taunt, and it's just going to go through.
Like, yeah.
So things like that,
Hey, Dave here. At this point, JT makes some really good points about using things like Resurrection to tempt your opponent to do some less optimal moves or mess up their bag management and things like that. But there's some distortion, so unfortunately I have to talk over because it's frankly unlistenable. We're back in.
Make a bad roll turn one, right? If you use Resurrection turn one, you've messed up your bag management for the rest of the game. And so just to entice players to do that, to bring Res without bringing Ring and not bring Professor... I feel like if I run up against someone else who's expecting to see Professor, like, I feel ahead already. You know,
yeah.
If I sit down against someone who says, oh, you didn't bring Professor, neither did I, this will be interesting, then if I hear someone say that today, I'm gonna be licking my chops a little bit, because I know how to play my team without Professor.
Well, and, you know, that's the thing, too, for me. If I sit down with Ring Res and I see Professor across from me, the only way that I'm going to use that that global ability is if I miss and there's really nothing else I can do to maintain ramp. Because otherwise, the consistency of Ring Res relies on having those five dice and no more in your use pile. So managing it that way, using Professor can really screw that up on future turns unless you're really confident that you're going to have an insane buy. Because, yeah, you'll get those. Maybe you'll be able to pull those dice back over when you want to. But then it could potentially mess up your ramp for the rest of the for the rest of the game. It could mess up your bag management.
One thing, how bag management is, you know, one of the ways that maybe you can get ahead that we talked about. You know, make the game more difficult, control some things like that. Character that was on the chopping block for me for a little bit that I'm not bringing. The 3-cost halfling thief that I've had some success with in the past, force your opponent to draw dice on your turn. I mean, if I knew that all of my opponents would be running Ring Res today, that would be an auto include, because that would disrupt bag management so much for my opponent.
Oh, that would kill me. Yeah,
I could still switch to it knowing that you guys are running Ring Res, but.
I'm finding that card and ripping.
I think some cards like that, abilities like that, or maybe some subtle ways that, no, it doesn't win you the game, but it can give you those little advantages here and there.
That's
fair. That, and that's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. Because, so you bring that, but you also bring Professor. So now, after I make my, you know, let's say you go first, right? Mm-hmm. So I make my first turn purchase, and it's spray, and I got four dice over there. My second turn, I'll probably buy Constantine, but I'll try and Professor twice, and then Rez to force spray over to my prep area and my bag to be empty.
Yes.
So that when you field that thief, yeah, a lot of dice go in my bag. Yeah, I might miss Connie, but I've got the one thing that I really need right mm-hmm. away to steal your Professor X and force you to use my engine that you don't want to use.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking mm-hmm. about. Find a way to make the game more complicated and be prepared to play a more complicated game, and that's how you gain an advantage and start to get ahead.
Right, and gosh, we've talked so many times about understanding ring res and how important that is. That's one of the more complex versions of ramp and bag management that you can use in the game right now. And I think in general it's about being, especially for the globals that you use, being better prepared. The problem with globals is that they can benefit both teams, and we've talked many, many times about certain basic action global ability combos that you can bring that essentially allows your opponent to do the exact same thing that you're doing. So it's kind of like a glass cannon, you know, that maybe works for an event or two, would be on a Phoenix fastball, for example.
Yeah.
But if you make sure that you will always have better use of your globals than what your opponent can do with them, that's a big deal. And then there are going to be those times when your opponent is tempted to use one because they have to.
Yeah.
They feel they have to, even better, then so much the better. But yeah, I agree with that. I mean, even with Taunt, Imprison isn't easy to play around with. If they want to buy it and try to play my game, I have Breaker. I mean, that's certainly happened a few times in testing, and it's easy to call out Breaker when I need it. And unless it misses and rolls fists consecutively, then okay, that's the nature of the game. But it's easy to get that when you want to because of the mechanisms that this one uses. So, it's fun. And then my opponent's not going to be able to play around Imprison. Like, please, imprison my stuff. I'm not going to worry about fabricating my stuff off or blue-eyesing it off just to avoid imprison. I'm going to say, fine, take it, because I'm going to get it right back. And unless you can win, in which case I can't do much about it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, as a strategy aside, that's another reason that I went for spray, is because spray protects imprisoned a little bit with, you know, like a taunt global or a toad on the other side. Spray wipes that out. So I can, you know, I can imprison something earlier on, and then if I can cycle spray, I don't have to worry about losing that purchase, losing the board state that I gained by using it, because I can keep those threats neutralized.
The only thing in testing, just looking at the teams that we think we're going to see and what we're using and stuff, it's, unless you're fabricating for a five-cost golem, or have something just for a global, there's very little reason to have anything that costs more than four energy to hard buy. And that's really a shame right now.
Yeah.
I miss those Hulk teams. Except for once when I wanted to try Kobolds, because it was like the last constructed tournament I was doing before Age of Ultron came out and potentially changed things up. I wanted to do the Johnny Swarm team that Mr. Mustache Truby had put together, because it would look like a fun team, and I wanted to give it a shot and play it in that environment. And it was fun. Every other time, I have had some form of Hulk on my team. I've loved to do that. In one way or another, I've loved to use Hulk. Can't use it. I've grown fond of Jinzo. Can't really use it. I mean, you can, but you're selling out so hard to get there that you're not in a good position to deal with what your opponent's going to do in response.
Yeah, and some casual constructed events at the shop, I mean, similar to what you said, Dave. I mean, I was fooling around with Cobalt a little bit. Just seeing what I could do.
It's fun.
Cobalt's on with a ring res engine to ensure you get the first one before you're rolling the rest is really fun. Mm. And I had the 7-cost purple worm on there, which that was a blast to play.
A little bit of shy halud there. Yeah, wasn't Truby trying something like that recently? I know he had. I know he was rocking the purple worm for an event. I don't remember when this was though.
Was that WKO2?
It might have been a WKO. Yeah, he was rocking the shy halud.
Well, WKO1. One at WKO2 at his store.
That's true. Yeah, so it must have been one.
Okay.
That's a lot of fun.
But I mean, I'm not spilling any secrets here because you guys aren't going to hear this podcast till after the event. one of the guys we're coming with though. He wanted, you know, a big bruising, you know, high cost character on his team, and one that he had played around with a little bit locally was the rare Bizarro. And so we recommend him, like, if you're gonna use a big beefy character, if you want this 7-cost character, let's go ahead and throw Bizarro on there, because you might find yourself up against a team that has, you know, 4 or 5 characters that have globals. And all of a sudden, maybe selling out to get him early will be a good strat, a fun strategy. So yeah, put him on the team. Let's see what happens. But I think in most cases, you guys are absolutely right. 4-cost or bust.
Yeah, things are just too fast, and the ramp engines that we have, those just fit the best into it. I mean, even when 6-costs were fine, with the exception of a couple of control teams, you were really only using. One, maybe two. Even earlier, it was like a 2-cost, a 4-cost, and a 6-cost, because that just fits so easily into some of the buying orders with Professor X, and especially if you're using Polymorph, sometimes you bypass the 4-cost and go for the 3. But, you know, High Hopes was Ant-Man, 2-cost Ant-Man, 4-cost Fury, 6-cost Hulk.
Yeah.
And good game. And many, many teams... many teams have been like that, and some of the best characters have fit well along that curve. But now, conversely, like 2, 3, 4 is really a sweet spot for some of the different buying strategies that you can use around ring res, or just being able to make a lot of purchases and rush things out like you can with Bard.
Well, I mean, it seems like it all stems from, why are high cost characters high cost? Most of the time, it's because of stats. I mean, the abilities can be good, but it's usually you see higher stats on higher cost characters. And a bard, a 4-cost character, can now give you the stats of 8-cost characters, you know, on a 2-cost.
On your 0-2 dwarf wizard.
Yeah.
Well, and that's really the problem, right? It's just...
I can buy a 2-cost, a 2-cost, a 3-cost. You know, I've spent 7 energy on these 3 characters. And if they're out with Bard, everything's giving, you know, +3, +3. Not to mention, if I have any sidekicks, giving them all +4, +4. So I spent 7 energy. Or I could buy a 7-cost character that, you know, might have 5-5 stats.
Well, and that's the thing. Control is supposed to be this archetype that has a long build to inevitability in winning the game. We have these control pieces that end up playing as a super, super aggro team, you know, because of the ridiculous cost. You know, the corollary to what you're saying about cost and stats, the high-cost characters have really beefy stats. The low-cost characters have, you know, relatively low stats, and it seems like that's all that was done to price them. It doesn't seem like ability power... mattered a whole lot. Like, we could argue a lot, and I think a lot of people would have different things to say. Jinzo versus Oracle, right? Like, Jinzo 6-cost has some solid stats. You know, the extra cost of the global abilities is pay 2 life. Versus Oracle, relatively low stats, 4-cost. All your globals cost an extra energy. Mm-hmm. There's an argument to be made about which one is better. The stats of Jinzo are nice, but Jinzo, yeah, I have to pay life to do it, but life's a resource. So I don't mind so much, but Oracle, you can put an opponent in situations where they simply can't. I can't afford to do this, or I can't afford to do this as much as I'd like. Jinzo chips away at life, but the game is so much 20-0
in a turn that it almost doesn't matter at this point.
Well, then if you throw Bard into that argument, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot to get Oracle to Jinzo-like stats.
Exactly. But even Oracle on her own as a control piece.
Oh, right.
You know, I mean, because even teams that were using Jinzo, unless they're winning by the Hulk smash, didn't necessarily need his stats to do it. I mean, JT and I did it with Nova, so you didn't need the full gamut of the full range of Jinzo stats to close the door. Yeah. It was nice to have. So stats seem to govern the cost. Like, you have the ability is objectively, I would say, on par with one another. They're at least equal. I think you can make an argument for either one being better, and I think both sides of that argument would have good points. So they're at least equal. But we have a significant enough difference in cost in terms of both fielding, right? Like, Oracle's completely free to field, and in terms of purchase.
Let's do this thought experiment then. So if both were five costs, both had Oracle stats, and both were masks, which ability would you choose?
Put me on the spot here. Both are masks.
Like, if everything was Oracle's dice,
yeah,
and both were five costs, and one was named Oracle and one was named Jinzo, but the one had Oracle's ability, one had Jinzo's ability. Like, all other things being equal, which ability would you choose?
See, I'd be partial to the Oracle.
I would probably go with Jinzo.
I would probably go with Jinzo, but in the meta right now, I think Oracle might be more effective.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the thing that swings it to Jinzo ability for me, honestly, is the action dice addition.
That's fair.
Yeah, but here's the crux of the matter. You have a character that was meta, six cost Jinzo. It was all over the place. It frustrated players. Other players loved it. They lived and died by it. I mean, it was the bread and butter of some of the teams that we were running for a while. And then you come out with a character that costs two less that provides mask energy that's free to field and is probably, I mean, it's at least arguably a better ability. Like, if you make all other things equal, you know, two of you guys should, like, how do you not just get frustrated when it completely takes a meta card out of the equation for, you know, just because it came out as a four cost?
Well, right, and that's what we talk about, and I've said this on the forum a few times, and now we're kind of getting into some bigger aspects beyond the tournament, and that's perfectly fine with me, because we still have a little ways to drive, and we might as well talk about something. It really limits the design space. So fine, so Jinzo is a six cost. How do you print something that does something similar to it, but that players will still use, right? Because otherwise, if it's similar, but it's too complex or not, like, the balance of its ability or in its cost and whatever else doesn't work out enough to at least be an argument, which one would you take? If nobody's going to use it, then why bother printing it unless you're putting it for a specific purpose in set? So,
careful there. Common Vixen.
Well,
common lull.
That card's very, very compelling for draft. But we're talking we're talking about if you're going to print cards with similar abilities, the idea is there you want there to be an argument for players to use it in certain situations. An example of where this failed that we thought it might succeed would be the uncommon fatality from War of Light, which looked like, hey, you know, this could be like a Gobby Light. Well, that never really materialized. Maybe someday it will. That has not really materialized at all. If you're going to have a character that's so similar, if it's going to get used, some combination of stat, ability, cost has to be better. Not better to the point where it's a flat-out better card, but better to the point where there's an argument for using either. Well, this came out and just talk about power creep. Just said, "Hey, this card is better."
Yeah.
And in fact, it's going to make it harder for anything on par cost wise with the old one to even be used. And that's a tough thing. Like, what are you going to print that's going to ever do what Elf Thief does better in any way, shape, or form. You cannot, you can't make it cheaper. You can't make the ability better. All you can do is give it better stats and make it cost more, but then why would you ever use it?
Yeah.
A better stat Elf Thief with costs? I don't care about that.
Because the nature of the game, you want a character like that to have low stats.
You need it to be,
you want it to cycle.
And you need it to be that cheap.
Yeah.
So that you can have three and parallax away all of your opponent's energy.
The reason that it's that good is that it's that cheap, too. If it cost five, it would be much harder to use and use effectively and use on demand. And you certainly wouldn't be purchasing two to four of them in a given game. But if, you see people purchase three and four Elf Thief.
If it had dropped as a three cost, it wouldn't be where it is in the meta today.
No.
But it would find its way onto very competitive teams.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It would be a good complementary piece, but now it's the piece. And, of course, Bard makes anything with weak stats better. But, I mean, geez.
Well, you don't care about weak stats so much because you want it to cycle. So let it die. You know.
But what Dave's saying is it can still fit into a Bard win condition with the weak stats.
Yeah, of course. But even, like, let's take a regular control team. I mean, and we talked about this after we went to PDC Morgantown with our Poly Jinzo, Hulk, Nova crazy teams. Like, you could essentially reconstruct that control team with some of the pieces, but take out Jinzo, put in Oracle, find a place for the Elf Thief, and different things like that. It replaces too many cards, and there's nothing that can ever be printed that is strictly better than it. And that's really... They design themselves into a hole in certain areas, and that's what... that's where I think some of the problems are.
Now, I mean, to play devil's advocate here for a second, so do you go back and revisit things like Zombie Magneto?
Not now. Not until... You can't right now.
How do you get a six cost out?
Yeah.
Right.
How do you get a six... You can get a six cost out. How do you do that and not die?
Right.
Well, like... So, it's frustrating, right? We're all kind of throwing up our hands.
Well,
But I just...
Again, that's why I'm gonna roll some dice, gonna have some fun. See Isaac. Haven't seen him in about a year, unfortunately. So that'll be cool to hang out for a while and meet some people in person that I haven't had the opportunity to meet yet. And that'll be cool.
Throw the shout out to PDC.
Yeah.
I don't think if they were just having an event with maybe a playmat and some stuff as prizes. I don't know if we would be going. I don't know if very many people would be going at all. But there's a cash prize.
Yeah, 200 to first place, 100 to second place, plus Frogtown Hobbies. Shout out to them is giving store credit in some capacity to all of the top 8 players.
Yeah.
Plus, they're going to have some store credit door prizes and some packs and other things like that. So just for showing up, you have the potential to win a few things. So, I mean... They put together a compelling package, and heck, I'll be happy if I go and just like win a $20 store credit door prize and give it right back to the store with a quick purchase of something.
Yeah,
and it'll be fun. You know, whatever.
There's over $700 of prize support,
something like that. Yeah.
If there's 40 people, the entry fees total $600, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We have what PDC's giving and what the store's giving and stuff like that. I mean, certainly on PDC's end for the $300 in prizes they're offering, plus the playmats and the dice towers and different things like that. They've also been able to print out the kits for the stores and sell those, and that's how they're able to do that and build to the championship season. So hopefully, as the as PDC builds past its first year, they'll have the opportunity to do more things. They have those casual kits that Joel was talking about on the forums that are going to happen later on. They're going to work out a draft series. So hopefully they'll have the opportunity then to also increase that. And I think that's an enticement. That's an enticement for some players. A lot of players like the promos, but some players also want a shot at the cash prize. And I think that's fine. Prizes are cool. I just like to... I don't really play with the motivation of prizes, I don't think. I just play because I like to play, and succeed as much as I can.
I think in this scenario, the benefit of the prizes is what tips the scale. Like, this is the same, essentially the same meta we've been playing since we've gone up to Canadian Nationals.
Yep.
Not a lot has changed in the competitive season. And here's one more event. We just had Worlds not that long ago. Nothing has changed. But, okay, there's some cool cash prizes. I can get some store credit, see some friends. Okay, the goods outweigh the bads.
Yeah,
you guys are funny. I play for the tears of my opponents.
It's actually, if you've never played against JT, and I can tell you this from playing against JT in a few tournament environments, he actually has a little Dixie cup that he, two of them, he asks his opponents to tape them underneath of their eyes, just where their cheekbones rise, so that the tears can flow in there. And then afterwards, after the tournament ends, he just takes a shot. And, it's got to be a little salty, but it seems to work for you.
Sorry.
In all honesty.
I'm sorry.
JT is a great guy. He just plays the part of this absolutely arrogant jerk. Just because he's had so much success in this game that relies so heavily on rolling dice.
Yeah.
It's all math. It's all math.
It's math and a little bit of...
A lot of luck. Yeah. A lot of luck, but mostly math. But mostly luck.
And then unlimited confidence.
You gotta have the unlimited... If you don't have the unlimited confidence, what are you even doing? Unlimited confidence and knowing, and Stuart can vouch for this, when to call a judge.
Oh man. I'm gonna get myself in so much trouble.
Yeah. Stuart's wife is never gonna let him hang out with us again.
Stuart, they bully you. You can't go.
You need to find new friends. They aren't good for you.
What tipped the scales for me is pretty... So what tipped the scales for me is the fact that I'm sitting here in the car with two good friends of mine, just BSing and talking about a game. And before this, we were talking about all kinds of stuff. After this, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. And that's what tips the balance for me is stuff like this. I don't mind a little car trip, but if these guys weren't going, I don't think I'd be going. So
yeah,
not to get all gushy on you.
Well, I mean, heck, Dave crashed at my place last night. We were looking up YouTube videos of Benedict Cumberbatch not being able to say the word penguins. I mean. It was a good time.
If you look up the clip from the Graham Norton show about how Benedict Cumberbatch can't say penguin, and I won't even say more than that. You have to look for it. It's astounding, and it's actually really fun to see Cumberbatch, who has played a lot of very very confident JT-like characters himself, be so visibly uncomfortable with what's happening. Go inside of himself and be really, really apprehensive and anxious. It's kind of fun. You got to check it out.
In my best case scenario, I would actually see JT that visibly uncomfortable sitting across the table from me during a game of Dice Masters.
Yeah, that's the dream, man.
That's the dream. To see him just squirm. Befuddled and squirm, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's I can imagine. I don't know if I can imagine that scenario. But yeah, we hung out, we played, Randy taught me the Versus, the new relaunch of the LCG for Versus system, got some ice cream,
Where'd you go for ice cream?
Erie Depot.
Oh yeah. Is it good?
Yeah, it was really tasty.
We have a couple good ones around, so that's why I asked.
Yeah. The kids got to brag about all their superhero Pokemon, Mario Kart cars, ballerina pictures.
Dave,
kids got to brag about pretty much everything.
They did. Dave has made it known to the kids that he's a geek. He knows nerd things, and so the kids are like, "Oh, well, I'm going to show him this superhero stuff." And
last time I was out here, Randy's one son was upset because before my wife and I left, he didn't have the opportunity to show me his hero clicks.
He was crying. He was upset when Dave left because I didn't get to show him my little guys. He calls the hero clicks his little guys.
That's some fun stuff. So
we made time for that.
The, But you're right. It's the community. It's getting together with folks like that probably wouldn't have a connection with except for the game. And I was in Chicago for work yesterday. I flew in last evening back home. But while I was there, I flew out Thursday afternoon, and I got on Facebook, and I messaged one of the guys who lives in Chicago or near Chicago that I knew was there. And I just said, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday because I know he's coming to this thing, and it's Jin. And I said, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing you Saturday, but for now I'm in your city here for work just for the night and home tomorrow. Turns out that Thursday evening was a casual play at Chicago Dice Dojo. And so, you know, he said, well, we're going to be playing from like 5 to 8, you know, just come on up. And I was like, actually, the Red Line makes that super easy. So I bought a one-day pass for the Red Line, and I took it up to Bryn Mawr and walked a block west, and now I'm at the Dice Dojo. So I got to play.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, I sat down, and he said, oh, you're just kind of casual tonight. And so I looked through some of the stuff that he had brought with him and you know, pulled out a random team and got to sit down and play against a guy named Brian who won one of their WKOs, I think. I think I've got that story right, and so he did the same thing. He looked through Jin's stuff and pulled out and sat down on the team, and so we just sat down and played some dice. And
that's really neat.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So Jin, Kit, and Brian, thanks for allowing me to just show up at your place and roll some dice with you guys and hang out for a little bit. But you know, something like that never happened. I would have stayed in my hotel room until the work thing that evening, like. Just kind of, you know, twiddling my thumbs or maybe, you know, watch a movie or something like it. You get those connections, you get that community only because this game exists and some folks are rallying around behind it. And I think that's honestly what makes it worthwhile playing despite some of the frustration we have with the current meta.
Absolutely. You know, I see that in so many... In so many games like this, too. You know, I look at some of the local Dice Master Facebook groups on Reddit, on our forum. I've seen it with Netrunner, Magic, Force of Will, other games where people are like, hey, I'm visiting this place for work for a couple of days. Anybody play? Anybody want to meet up? Like, and that stuff just happens. Heck, there was a couple, about a year or so ago, a guy on the board game subreddit was going to be in... is it Belgium? I can't remember. Somebody can correct me as soon as I say the name of the city. There's a board game called Bruges by Stefan Feld. And he wanted to play the game Bruges while in the city Bruges while watching the movie in Bruges. Can anybody meet up with him who is a board gamer in that city and make it happen? And lo and behold, like 2 weeks later, there's a picture of him at a cafe by like a river or canal in Bruges, watching in Bruges on a laptop, and they're playing Bruges.
Like, that's hilarious.
Only in this hobby can that kind of stuff happen. And I think that's amazing. There's a guy who played Alhambra in Alhambra. Like, I love that stuff. And you're absolutely right, JT. That's a... it's just a really stellar aspect of what we get to do with this. You know, I wouldn't know you guys. I wouldn't know Isaac. And my goodness, I talk to you guys probably every single day.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, part of that's we work on the reserve pool, so we have logistics and stuff to nail down. But I will tell you, listeners, for a little inside baseball, I would say probably 95% of what happens in our Slack chat that we use to coordinate everything has absolutely nothing to do with anything website related in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
I mean, we would rather probably talk about horchata sometimes. Or have Oddball Narwhal just make us absolutely die of laughter.
Hashtag every channel is wrestling channel.
Even this podcast channel right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so normal... I mean, if you tuned into the Attack Zone today hoping to get, you know, the great, you know, tactical breakdown that we normally provide, like, I am deeply sorry.
Well, you know, I think in a way, we've talked a little bit about what we're using and why we're using it. I think what we get to focus on here is probably the aspect that's most important to us about Dice Masters and about gaming, which is really, I feel like Jerry Springer's "What Have We Learned Here Today?" But which is really the community and the friendships and the relationships that we build as a part of our, you know, our membership in the community of gamers. And that's really what it's all about.
That's the best meta of all.
Oh my
God.
That's it. Thanks, Mr. Rogers.
Randy, it's you I like.
You know, it's funny. Like, so about this time in the drive on the way to WKO1 in Detroit, I was anxious. I was amped up. I was like, you know, I was excited. Just kind of terrified. Like, what's going to happen today? I really felt the need to really prove myself after, you know, going on almost a year from winning Canadian Nationals to not. I mean, it had been almost a year since I'd done anything well competitively. And so I was all amped up. Right now, I'm just cool, loose, hanging out with you guys. It's been great.
Yep.
There's a car following us with a few of our local guys who are excited to play. We had a pit stop right before we started recording, and one of them's, you know, trying to make some last-minute adjustments, and so we stood between the two parked cars and tried to talk it through, and one of the other guys turns and he says, "Man, just thank you guys so much for helping." I'm like, "What do you mean? This is fun for us. This is great." I said, "You're going to play guys today who are like, at the end of your game, whether you win or lose, that they'll give you tips. Like, they'll, you know, you find out that you've only been playing for a month and a half, 2 months. They'll tell you all their thoughts. Like, that's what this community is. That's what gets shared, even at competitive level events. So,
yep.
That's why I keep playing.
Maybe that is the best meta of all."
Oh, jeez.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to end this part of it. At any rate, certainly either afterwards, depending on my laptop battery, or on a future episode, we'll talk a little bit more about how this went, and shortly there will be some reports and articles and whatever else to come out of this. But for now, thank you all for listening. As ever, we know that you can spend your time in so many different ways, and we are very grateful that you're choosing to spend it with us. We will see you in 2 weeks, or maybe even later, but I'm not going to guarantee anything. Like, later, after I say this.
Like 10 hours from now.
Like 10 hours from now as we record, but not like... like, not later than 2 weeks.
That's going to need edited a lot.
Well, to get the full effect...
We're keeping all of this.
To get the full effect, maybe you should just pause the podcast now.
For 10 hours.
Wait 10 hours and listen to the rest of it.
A cliffhanger.
Oh, it's terrible. Oh.
Well, that's quite a lot of road noise, but no surprise... Check. Sibilance.
Chocolate, peanut butter, banana, ice
check.
Cream.
Check. Hey, 1, 2, check. Hey.
Horchata.
Horchata. Horchata.
Could you do tomato juice with horchata?
I think that would be the worst. Do you like your tomato juice to taste like Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Is that what horchata is?
It tastes like Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I mean, it's a cinnamony.
Yeah.
Beverage.
It is.